some of the behaviors. And so we've noted some of those things. It'll be something we're probably going to work with him on. And we're so blessed that we have therapists like throughout Elijah's life. We've been really blessed that we have Isaac's therapy gym, and we take Elijah to every therapy appointment. And I have other people like telling me like, this is okay. Like, this is good behavior. Like, he's developing okay, which is an incredible reassurance.
That's true. It's been nice to see, to have people to say, by the way, Elijah's perfectly fine. Yeah. Because one of the hardest parts for both of us is any small thing you see, and kids all develop differently. Yeah. They all develop on different timelines. They all do quirky things because they're learning how to be humans. And we would see stuff and go like, oh my gosh, is this like a harbinger or something bad? Is this like the first sign? And we can spiral very quickly.
And so
we have to like temper each other quite often in terms of things we see. But then going somewhere where there's a lot of people who have seen a lot of kids and say, no, he's okay. Like, okay, we're going to be, it's okay. Everything's okay.
Yeah.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the Dr. Alex Show. This is going to be a cool show. We have a family that we've been blessed to be able to work on, Dr. Lauren and I, and it's a family out of California. And these guys, I'm going to let their story unfold, however this happens. But what's going to be really neat is if you hear it in the background or even see it, they got two kids, one in each hand, one kid for each person here. And the story, I'll let me start with names, Brianna and Matt Christian. And their backgrounds are, Matt is actually finishing things up to be a urologist, and Brianna is a nurse. And they gave birth to an awesome baby boy with a very rare genetic disease that I'll let them spill the beans about. But if it's a little loud, or if it gets a little crazy, or if the editing's weird, it's just because we got Isaac in the background, and then they have their new baby boy. Well, he's not new, Elijah in the background, who's also needing some attention. But here you go, guys. I've been, like I said, I've been excited to have you guys on and just have you guys kind of tell your story and how you guys got through your situation with Isaac, and then having a baby boy come along after Isaac, who is awesome and obviously with less challenges, but
different challenges.
Yeah, different challenges.
Yeah.
Anyway, so where do you guys want to start? What do you want to talk about with this? Because it's kind of a unique topic when you have a child with a severe genetic issue and how you navigated all of that and where you guys are at today.
Do you want me to start?
Yeah.
So when we, I guess, conceived Isaac, I was a Navy nurse officer working on a labor and delivery unit. And Matthew was the GMO on a ship for the Navy. And so that means he's a general medical officer. We both had pretty busy lives. But also we were obviously involved in healthcare and pretty well versed in so many of the nuances of care. So we had Isaac, and he was healthy. He was, you know, everything seemed like our dream come true when we had him. Like, we just had this beautiful baby boy, and he passed like all the original tests, which for me as a labor and delivery nurse and former NICU nurse felt like, okay, like I can breathe now, like
we're
okay. And everything kind of went really well for the first like 3.5 months of his life. And then we started to really notice some key differences with Isaac that were subtle. And that was hard to communicate with others because it was, like I said, so subtle. He had a head lag and he had some poor trunk tone. So some hypotonia, but mild hypotonia at that time. And then he started to begin losing weight and losing some other functions. And so it was kind of a slow decline for us until he was about 11 months old. And I talk about this in more detail on that The Rare Life podcast, so I won't go into the full details.
Well, actually, please share that. Okay. I forgot. Okay. So what's the name of that podcast again?
It's called The Rare Life.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, I outlined kind of my emotional process through all of that because throughout that time, Matthew was actually deployed pretty frequently. And so I was like, on my days off, I would take Isaac to like all the therapy appointments and the doctor appointments. And it just kept being like this. Something's wrong, but we don't know what it is. And then they're like, he'll get better. And we were like, that doesn't just happen. Like, you don't just stop develop. And as you know, with your everything you guys practice, it's like, usually there's an event if there is that kind of regression, and it's just a delay. But this wasn't that. It was like, everything seemed off. For us. And the neurologist was like, yeah, he'll probably be fine. And, you know, we have kind of a whole post about that situation too. But we ended up at 11 months, or sorry, at about 9.5, 10 months, he was hospitalized for failure to thrive, which was a godsend in our book because we knew like something's just not right.
I remember when we talked about that too.
Yeah, and we're so grateful that they listened and that they like actually took us seriously. And we ended up doing genetic testing at that time, which takes, unfortunately, it took about 6 weeks to process. But at that time, Isaac looked pretty cachectic. He was not looking well. He wasn't able to eat. His swallowing was impaired. He was barely able to hold up his head sometimes from prone position, but still mild. And then that was like everything after that, as you know, for like, as a functional neurologist, it was not happening. And so when one of the doctors, or there was a nurse who came in and said, I don't understand, there's nothing wrong with him. We were like,
I disagree. Yeah.
Are you sure?
That's it.
Yeah. We kind of had a lot of the runaround there between medical professionals, kind of treating us like we had Munchausen's and we're making it up a little bit. And
I think
that was hard.
The hard part was the easy answer is, well, he's just not being fed properly because he's losing so much weight. I'm like, no, I promise you, this kid's being fed properly. And it was difficult breaking people's minds and their biases free of that assumption to get to the point where they're like, oh, there's something wrong here.
And I'm not defending practitioners, but to kind of explain to the parents, like, why would a group of practitioners so narrow-minded on like, oh, it's just food. Unfortunately, it's called practice for a reason. They were in a tunnel vision and they're people.
Yeah.
So it's not giving them an excuse, but that's what happens.
Oh, no, it's understandable. Totally, I mean, 80% of the time, it probably is as simple as that. We get that. I'm sorry about it.
Sorry.
He has much to say.
Sorry, that is Isaac.
It's fine.
Anyway, I think it was a lot for us to try to help people break out of that understanding that the simple answer might not actually be the answer in this situation, and it might actually be the really scary answer that nobody wants to talk about, which is that this kid is really sick and has a real disease that none of us could have predicted. And unfortunately, that is the case with so many rare genetic conditions, which is, I guess, where we found that a lot of people don't understand it well.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't understand it well coming out of med school and being a doctor. It's just not something that I was really well versed in it all, and
yeah,
I had to learn a lot.
Yeah, and well, so I mean, once we got the diagnosis, so that was March 25th of 2020, and as I'm sure everybody remembers, that was like the week that COVID hit the country, and my husband and Matthew got deployed that week, and so we were kind of in this space where the medical system also shut down in many ways, mm-hmm. because they were so focused on COVID, and we realized like kind of the medical system is not going to support us. Like it's not going to be the end all be all answer for us in terms of caring for Isaac. I mean, we had gone to some therapies. It was clear that it's nothing against therapy. It just, that was not the end all be all answer either.
Yeah.
And I think at that point it was like, I was alone with Isaac. You were deployed. It felt like the world was shutting down.
Yeah.
And I know for so many of us, it was like, we turned to faith. We turned to our religion. We learned to like really trust God in this process. And it became clear to us that this journey that we're going on with Isaac is so much bigger than us.
Yeah.
And hopefully throughout our conversation here today, like we do want to make sure that people understand, like we are not anything more special. Like we just are people trying, like two humans trying to do God's purpose in our lives. So yeah. And so that's our journey with Isaac. Yeah. I don't know. And so when you got home.
Yeah. There's a lot of detail, I think. Sorry. No, it's good. I think that is in the other podcast too, in terms of his kind of diagnostic journey.
Yeah.
I'd say once we realized that there was more to be done for him than we were able to get from the system as it stood, Rana really started looking into what else could be done. And yeah. I've always been kind of like, you know, this is allopathic medicine, which is traditional, you know, medicine in the sense of like the American system is the only way to go. And all this other stuff is silly. And I've clearly changed my mind quite a bit in our journey here. Things that can be helpful, but as we were kind of moving forward. Yeah, I know. Yeah. It was little things that helped him. Like Brianna found a chiropractor who was safe with kids because she was like PICU trained nurse and then became a practitioner. And we found,
acupuncture.
We found a vibration plate, the Galileo vibration plate.
Yeah.
And we were able to use it every day. We were able to introduce that into his therapy at Rady.
Yeah.
And they found that it was helping. And one of the things that we try to treat with kids like Isaac is these contractures that they get. It gets really tight. And we didn't want to put him down the road of Botox injections. They do work for some, but we wanted to try to delay that or stave it off completely if possible. And the Galileo plate allowed us to do that. And that was noted by the therapists at Rady. And they were like, oh my gosh, we've never seen this. This is amazing. You're like, okay, clearly there's something here that we're missing in the system. And it's, I don't think it's anybody's fault. I think it's just, it's so complex. And that really helped him. And then through more searching, Brianna found Dr. Alex and we took him there, and within a week we saw changes that I didn't know were even possible.
I'm sorry, real quick.
Go ahead.
What is it that Isaac's diagnosed with?
Oh, I'm sorry.
We didn't even go there. Isaac has a very rare disease called Allan Herndon Dudley syndrome. It's also called MCT8 deficiency. And he can't move thyroid hormone across his brain. And so his brain thinks he doesn't have enough of it, so it makes more of it. And then the rest of his body can move it just fine. And so it turns into a lot more of the active version T3, which causes muscle and fat wasting. And that's why he was losing so much weight, that in addition to his loss of muscle coordination. And so these kids have kind of a weird picture of cerebral hypothyroidism and peripheral hyperthyroidism. And so they lose weight, they have poor muscle control, poor coordination, they have global delays. And it doesn't look like anything else except maybe CP. It looks a lot like CP.
Right.
And so it's a very rare disease. I think about 400 or so have been diagnosed worldwide with it, but we're pretty convinced there might be others who just aren't diagnosed because it's a difficult thing to find.
It doesn't look like when we found this as we were going through our journey with many practitioners, is if you don't do an in-depth like assessment, I mean, so similar to what you did, is if you just look at him at face value, you're going to miss it. Like, you're going to call it CP, mm-hmm. or you're going to call it something else, and you'll be wrong and treat him incorrectly. And that's kind of the problem. That's the major problem for us, is that unfortunately that quick across the room assessment, even a 5-minute assessment, is not appropriate if you don't have the right tools, because you will largely misunderstand how much is happening behind the surface for him.
Yeah. And we found that a lot of the assessments that are designed for these things are very heavily based on your ability to do motor control.
Yes.
And it misses the ability to see how he's thinking. And we're like, because all the assessments they gave were very doom and gloom. They were very bad. Oh, they called his age like 4 months. And like
three. It was like newborn. It was
awful. And we were looking at the report and saying, but he doesn't act like that. Like, his brain doesn't act that way. And that's when we discovered that there's got to be more going on. Let's continue to work with the system, but let's not necessarily trust that it's right. Yeah. Is kind of where we went with it. And that's how we found that coming to somebody who has different training, like Dr. Alex, allowed us to find some answers that we were looking for. That was very helpful. Yeah. To kind of make us feel like we weren't crazy. Because your assessment showed that the gears were turning, you know?
Yeah, and you confirmed in so many ways.
Yeah.
When I listened to your podcast, which I found through some hole of Instagram, I think at some point in time.
Funny, because it's a very pathetic presence, but.
No, it was, I feel like we were led to,
I was led to listen to you.
And I was listening to your journey, and you and Dr. Lauren have just such an incredible understanding of the real complexities of the human mind and the human body, and just how to, like, you have the knowledge of hope and healing, but understanding that it's not necessarily the parents' fault or anybody's fault in particular, which I think is missing sometimes from our more Western medical system.
Some type of blame, whether it's to a person or a disease process. And
sometimes we end with the blame.
And we end with the blame, and there's no solution. And I think I would say that you were the first person to treat him like he was a person worth trying to find an answer to.
And help.
Because that's what we didn't have.
He could go beyond.
Yeah.
It wasn't just like, well, he's disabled, looks bad. Oh, well, like, you know, we can do these things, but like, it's not really going to improve. And, you know, as I was listening to your stories and your podcast, I was like, you know, that's not the end. Like, I know, like, you were willing, I could tell you would be willing to try, even if it felt a little crazy.
I think for us, the hardest part is recognizing that there's a lot of families that don't have exposure to that.
Yeah.
And the hope that you get from recognizing there are people who are actually trying to help make it different, and not just, and it's not blaming anybody. The system is what it is. There, you do the prescribed treatment and move on. But there was a difference in trying to treat Isaac versus his disease. And I think once we saw that was a reality, a possible reality for us, we realized that other people needed that reality too. And after we started seeing the changes that we got with you, we were starting to get, people were starting to reach out a little bit and ask us, like, well, how is he doing and how is he different and what changed? And a lot of it was, well, there's hope, and there's hope for you too. And I think people need to recognize and hear that, yes, there's a possibility we can actually help. Somebody can help somewhere. Like, it's not all doom and gloom. There is light somewhere. Because I didn't have that until after we came to see you, actually.
Yeah.
To be honest. Right. I would say that's really, really unfolded for us.
I mean, you, Dr. Alex, changed Matthew's perspective in so many ways.
That's true.
Like, you really are, like, such an incredible person, you and Dr. Lauren, because I could tell Matthew was, like,
I was skeptical going in.
He was looking at me like I was crazy, but he was willing to follow my like holes of, you know, like if I said something, he was like, okay, we're going down this road.
Yeah.
And telling him like, we're going to Kansas City, Missouri, to a restaurant called Lee's Summit. And we're going to go take our kid for like a functional neurology intensive with the chiropractor. And I could tell he was like,
with like Cairo.
I was skeptical.
Like, are you like on something? And I was like, look, I get it. It's like, we've never met this guy. It sounds crazy. I was like, but I think this is really important. And I could see in his eyes, he was like, I love you, so I'll follow you, but you're nuts.
It's true.
And when we met you and he like heard you going through Isaac's exam and then discussing the parts of his brain that you,
the tree model,
like the whole tree and you were outlining it. Like you wouldn't know this because you don't know him. You didn't know him as well, but I saw his brain going like, oh my gosh, like, oh my gosh, this is a real assessment. This is like there. Isaac is actually there. Like he really has developed beyond what they said.
And I think quite a bit more than they said.
And that was such a
game changer.
Yeah, game changer for us and for our whole family, I think. So
and that really lit the fire for us to keep pushing here to try and change what was available for Isaac too. Because after we worked with Rady, we found that we were looking for some different individualized care. And so we moved to a different therapy center here. And we also got them involved in the play situation and they got a galley play as well. And they started seeing changes and it made us not zealous perhaps, but we felt a calling in some way to try and help spread the things that helped Isaac for kids like him, because it seems so not unfair, but kind of unfair that these technologies exist and they didn't even know about them. And many of us therapists had no idea either.
Well, we recognized our privilege in being able to see you and having the knowledge that that is an opportunity. And I recognize how blessed we are. And I would never want that to be a hindrance for other people to have access.
Yeah.
Like if I can improve access to care where people are so they don't have to fly over to Kansas City, which is, we love it. We want to make sure people have access to that, where they are. But also recognizing like you and Dr. Lauren are truly unique, in what you do.
Yeah.
And like the way you approached a child as severely disabled as Isaac is no small feat. So
yeah.
Oh well, this doesn't need to be accolades about.
It's okay. It's just the truth, though.
This is what led us here.
It is much appreciated. And for everyone else that's listening, if you haven't figured it out, like a lot of professions, there's a decent amount of animosity between medical professionals. I mean. And it's all because we have different ideas and we all think we're right and whatever. But the fact that two highly trained medical professionals, one including a medical doctor, comes and sees a chiropractor for care. Like honestly, 5 years ago, Lauren would have been like, okay, you got to make sure that you're not going to act like a, you know it all and you're not going to be arrogant and all this stuff. She had to pull me down from the cloud like she always does. But when I prompted Lauren on what was going on, I said, okay, so I just talked to this couple I talked to mom out of California. This is what's going on. And she's like, okay, well, we have to do homework and figure out what's going on with this disease. And then she said, you realize the leap that dad's going to make when he comes out here. Right. And I was like, yeah. Because for any man to take help from another man or anyone in general is hard.
It's like taking directions. So we'll drive 4 hours the wrong way before we.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
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 And then all of that brings up a good point about hope, because in healthcare, there's amazing technologies out there and things that you can do to help people in ways that you wouldn't think is possible. It just happens to be that with functional neurology, it's very untraditional. And I mean, over half the equipment we use in our office, we're not using it for what it's designed for it to use. In all honesty, we're taking it, we're using it for other things.
Yeah.
But therein lies like an issue. So if we're using equipment for things that aren't meant to be used for, and then people want to ask, okay, what's your evidence behind that? And, you know, where are your RCTs and where's your research? Well, in that case, all we have is a basis and a theory of, I'm going to take this piece of equipment, I'm going to apply it to this kid for this purpose because of ABC. That's why I'm doing it. If it makes sense, we do it. If it doesn't, obviously you can't do it. It just happens to be that most of the time it's pretty safe, but
yeah.
Well, and most, as you know, most clinical trials won't include pediatric patients. And if you have the most, you know, most disabled children ethically won't be tested on for reasons of communication and, you know, other factors associated with like access to care. So the fact that you have these tools and you know, like we know application on some adults gives certain results, and you have such an understanding of how it affects other children with, and just like the mechanisms of action. So you're at least willing to try, which I so appreciate, because with Isaac's diagnosis, it, like Matthew was saying, it sounds pretty doom and gloom when they were giving us the information. And even though we have started, like he's on a clinical trial now, which is life-changing and beneficial to him in many ways, but it doesn't obviously solve everything. It just, it helped and it stopped a lot of the more negative
symptoms
of his disease. But again, he still, like, he didn't start it till he was 2 years old. So that means that all of the development really up until he was two was lost in many ways. And so for you to be willing to try all of the treatments and, you know, talk with me through different protocols to try on him, I mean, it takes a huge leap of faith and just a willingness on your part to like say, like, let's see what happens. Like, try it. I know Isaac so well that I can tell you, like, yeah, he's okay, or nope, now, like, now that's enough.
Yeah. But, and that happens like when we're not, when for the 2 times you were in office, especially that first week, last year, a lot of it was, okay, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
You got to tell me when we're hitting bad territory.
Yeah. But I mean, we found how much he could handle, which was incredible. I mean, this kid can take so much. And I think other practitioners practicing a model with samples that had patients presenting differently wouldn't have been willing to try what we tried with Isaac, recognizing that he is telling us he's leading the results. This is an N of one study. This is like, you turned on the NMES and he was like, bring it on, Dr. Alex, that all right. You got? And like, we were able to increase it to a point where it was clear that he was going to benefit from what you were doing. And to be
clear, it's not like we're doing things that are way off the realm of the intended purpose of these devices. No. Like, we were doing treatments that are intended for that. It's just they hadn't been tried in his context, which was a reasonable thing to do.
Yeah.
But I would never have been exposed to it. And I don't know if other people.
And all together in one setting,
right.
Which is what you
and I think
offered.
Ultimately, what that comes down to, like the lesson for others who are listening too, is especially if you were one who is treating people, it's okay to try something new within the confines of safety, obviously, but it's okay to try something new for somebody or to look at the new research that's coming out, even if it may not be from your specialty.
Right.
Because I wasn't reading any of the stuff on red light therapy or NMES. Like I never thought to look at that. I was like, well, there should be a medication that will fix it. And that was pretty much where it ended for me. like looking at stuff until I realized, oh, there are actually studies. There are different types of studies out there. They don't have to be RCTs to say there's some efficacy here or some safety with this that you can try. And I think when you realize that there, it's worth looking into. I think that's there's a lesson there in looking out to some other specialties and see what they're doing and try it.
Yeah.
But that was big for me.
Right.
And then the big change for us, obviously, in all of this, because we got into a pretty good groove with Isaac through residency and everything. And then we were surprised to learn that we had Elijah coming. And that changed things a little bit for...
Because I was pregnant for the first intensive, yeah. So we kind of, when we knew we were expecting, it was kind of one of those things where it was like, okay, we know it's going to be, this is going to be hard. Like, not just like a little hard, because caring for a disabled child is challenging. And with Isaac's needs, I knew that was going to be a lot. But I needed to do as much as we could as quickly as possible to get Isaac to a really stable and healthy point in order for us to actually be able to provide appropriate care for a second child. And I would say prior to that year, I know for sure we would not have been able to handle a second child. Isaac was far too intensive for my, you know, minute by minute needs. But after he saw you, he was actually able to play by himself, which I had never experienced.
Yeah, that was huge.
In our like 3 years. So he started to play by himself, and he started to give us more cues that said, like, he was a big boy now. Like, he wanted to be a big boy. He wanted to play his own games. And that ultimately gave us like confidence as we were approaching, you know, my due date that, okay, he's going to be okay. Like, it will have some of its own setbacks and challenges when learning how to navigate two children who have very intensive needs for a period of time. But we know this, like, you taught us so many of the steps to do and what things to look for and how to support him, so that looking forward, it was like, okay, we're addressing that some delays may occur, but also incredible growth may occur. With Elijah, our second.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So after Elijah was born, we noted that Isaac started to regress a little bit, but then he began mirroring Elijah, which was really incredible, because you know, as we've talked about Isaac's development, there was newborn to 3 months was kind of where the early developmental tests were showing him. So a lot of his like 3 to 5, 3 to 7 month development was really immature. And a lot of that, like, as we talked about, midbrain development is still in the works.
We're getting there.
But when he was watching Elijah, he would start to mimic him with his mirror, you know, use the mirror neuron. So he would start to bring things to his mouth, and he started to play with different toys. And you could tell he was more intentional, because there was another kid in the room doing the fun things. But then he wanted to also do the things that Elijah was doing. So he started working harder to play with a toy, or they were kind of fighting over, like, you know, they're like, who's going to hit the toy, which was really cute and really funny. And like, kind of just a miracle of like siblings for us, because we're like, hey, this is crazy. We're both so sleep deprived, but they're actually caring for each other a little bit right now, which was really beautiful and cute.
Yeah, his ability to focus while standing in the walker.
Yeah.
He got significantly better after watching Elijah grow up. I mean, that was probably like 4 to 6 months for Elijah. I mean, he started really being more intentional as a baby, obviously.
Yeah,
you got more intentional too. And then, of course, it's a little bit in the reverse. And this is something that we always get a little bit worried about, is like, is Elijah watching some of the things that Isaac is doing? And is he going to mirror those things? Like,
the truth is yes.
Yes.
Yes, he does. And we're going to work on that. And as you know, like you spoke about it actually to us during his first intensive,
yeah.
Like that there might be some mirroring back where the second child will copy some of the behaviors. And so we've noted some of those things. It'll be something we're probably going to work with him on. And we're so blessed that we have therapists like throughout Elijah's life. We've been really blessed that we have Isaac's therapy gym, and we take Elijah to every therapy appointment. And I have other people like telling me like, this is okay. Like, this is good behavior. Like, he's developing okay, which is an incredible reassurance.
That's true. It's been nice to see, to have people to say, by the way, Elijah's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Because one of the hardest parts for both of us is any small thing you see, and kids all develop differently.
Yeah.
They all develop on different timelines. They all do quirky things because they're learning how to be humans. And we would see stuff and go like, oh my gosh, is this like a harbinger or something bad? Is this like the first sign? And we can spiral very quickly.
And so
we have to like temper each other quite often in terms of the things we see, but then going somewhere where there's a lot of people who have seen a lot of kids and say, no, he's okay. Like, okay, we're going to be, it's okay. Everything's okay.
Yeah.
Well, when you guys were last in office, we checked out Elijah, and same thing. He was utterly perfect. Absolutely no regards, no concerns. I mean, actually, I would think that if I were thinking, probably should have used him as an example of what it should look like, because everything was so on point. It was almost textbook.
That's good to hear. No, we appreciate it. We're really lucky with him, but we're still obviously going to be.
It's hard. It comes.
Acknowledging.
It comes all the time, that feeling of like, is there something wrong? No, he's fine. Like, this, it's not like a one and done thing.
No,
it's a continuous battle of recognizing that we have to temper ourselves and calm ourselves before we panic.
This wraps up part one of this special episode of the Dr. Alex Show. We hope that you will join Dr. Alex next week as he continues his conversation with Matthew and Brianna. The next episode, they'll be talking about PTSD and coping with their mental health as they continue this journey with their children.
The Dr. Alex Show is hosted by myself, a nerd, Dr. Alex Nelson. I'm a chiropractor, board certified in functional neurology and childhood neurodevelopmental disorders. The show is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or most any of your other favorite podcast apps. The Dr. Alex Show is a production of Fredcasts. Think, speak, act.